Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, Chris Cousins here from Sports Recruiting USA. We've got another special episode. This time we're actually using the audio from a podcast episode our head of operations in North America, Don Williams, was on a week or two ago. It was the Soccer Queens podcast. And Erica, who runs it, has kindly said we can use the audio because I listened to it and I was like, oh my God, there's so much information on here which is really useful, and we should try and distribute this to our audience as well. So Erica has kindly let us use that. So this episode here talks about, I mean, there's a variety of things. They've done four actual episodes of talking about college recruitment, but this is the latest one, and we'll probably use the other ones as well, but we'll get to that point later on. But this one here, they talk about the kind of the right fit, basically stop chasing colleges that are not interested in you, and a variety of information. So even though it's aimed at females, it's actually information that's kind, it's basically for both males and females. So if you're a parent, you're a player, you're a coach, whatever, it's really, really, really worth listening to. Like I say, the other episodes as well, I think we'll probably use them and put them, distribute them, just because it's such good information in that. But we'll do that over the next month or two. So anyway, this is an episode from the Soccer Queens podcast. It's Erica who is interviewing Don Williams. And also, just before I go, if anyone's listening to this and enjoys our podcast episodes, we would love it if you can kind of leave us a review. It's really helping us. We've had a few people comment and messages privately and publicly and say how much they're enjoying it. So we do try and release where we can. We are trying to increase that just because we have a bank of podcast episodes we haven't released yet, and we're looking at a new variety of ways of collecting sort of information to give to you guys via the podcast channel. So that's enough of me babbling on. Like I say, my name is Chris Cousins. I'm available on Twitter and Instagram. Just search Chris M. Cousins, you'll find me. And then if you ever need any questions, I'm more than happy to help. And in terms of SIUSA, we're all over social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, I can't say it. And yeah, just search for SIUSA. So that's it. Thanks for your time, guys and girls. Like I say, wherever you are in the world, hope you enjoy this. And this is the Inside College Soccer Podcast, special episode from the Soccer Queens podcast. There we go.
Today, I am back with Don Williams for our college recruiting series, which has been a fan favorite. And I believe we are on episode 4 or 5 of this series. I've really lost track because there is so much to talk about, and we're just really happy to help everyone. So, Don, a lot of people know who you are, but for those who don't know, just give a 30-second elevator pitch.
Yeah, so Don Williams, the company is called Sports Recruiting USA. We have offices literally around the world. We bring in kids from around the world, domestically and international, and we're trying to find the right fit in the college system amongst the 1,600 or so programs in the country. Former college coach, did that for 22 years, very short stint coaching pro. I don't talk about it a lot because it was one season. But I've been involved in this game for over 50 years.
So wealth of experience in the game and with recruiting. So today, let's jump right in. Finding the right fit. We're going to define what the right fit means. It's a very popular hashtag on Twitter right now, and it's getting a lot of traction. But I do want to just clear the air on this. But Don, I need to ask you, because a lot of people have been asking, are you anti D1?
No. I'm pro right fit. In fact, we just released our numbers for this last year. It's about 25%, 25%, 25%, D1, D2, a lot of junior college. It's about pathway and career management for these kids. It's about finding the right school. My own son played D1. Why would I be against D1? I've been accused of being anti D1 because of our business, because we only have connections at lower end schools that we're trying to push kids into lower end schools. And it's complete and total horse hockey. We placed two kids at Indiana this past year on the men's side, which go ahead and argue that they're not consistently the best team in the country. And then we placed girls at Florida State. Go ahead, make an argument. It's not one of the best teams in the country. And then water flows downhill. Look, it's all on the quality of the player and what their career path is. We've got very high-end quality players that we see going to D3 schools that turn down D1 opportunities because it wasn't the right fit for them. What their priorities are different. So look, this is the easiest way for me to explain this. And I've thought a lot about this, Erica. There's two ends of a spectrum. On one end are players like me and my son. What we cared about was soccer. Where we got our degree from kind of didn't matter. We were probably going to have a career in soccer. What our degree was kind of didn't matter. I know friends of mine that are coaching in college that have history degrees. I know other friends that have English degrees. Not everybody studies kinesiology to go and coach in college. I know psychology degree friends that are coaching in college. So if that's your career path, is being involved in the game of soccer as a career, it doesn't matter that much what your degree is in and where it was from. The soccer comes first. I don't shame those kids. They're off coaching in college. They're trying to coach in the pros. They're trying to figure out, how do I make this passion of mine, this game, a lifetime experience? Some of them are coaching kids in how to become physically stronger because that's their passion. They love the sport, people like you. Great that you graduated from Johns Hopkins, and I'm sure it helped, but you could probably be doing what you're doing had you graduated from Akron State. You'd probably still be on your same pathway, I'm guessing. Maybe not. And then the other end of the spectrum, I literally have a client I'm working with right now who wants to send rockets into space. I know two schools in the country, both named Embry-Riddle, who specialize in sending rockets to space. That was our first approach, was to those coaches. They're making a final evaluation this week. We'll know this week if she's capable of playing at those schools. If not, we'll move on to other engineering schools. The focus for her is the academics. The soccer is an outlet. It's a release. It's something she doesn't want to stop doing yet. That's the other end of the spectrum. And then if you look at it as a spectrum, know that there's kids that fall on every point in that spectrum. Now, to add to the complexity of the situation, some people are very middle class, where the whole family together makes a grand total of $60,000 a year, maybe not quite poor enough to get fully funded education grants from the government, but not wealthy enough to be able to afford a school where you say, hey, I've had clients, dads who say to me, look, I can write a check right now for all 4 years to any school in the country. If I need to write a $500,000 check, I'll write a $500,000 check. It doesn't matter to me. So we've got that spectrum from zero EFC, which means in government terms on FAFSA, it means the government expects you to pay zero as an expected family contribution. That's what EFC stands for. We've got that on to the wealthiest of the wealthy, and then everywhere in between that. So that becomes a limiting factor in finding the right fit for a lot of kids. Great that Baylor wants you. I'm just going to pick on Baylor for a second, but it's a very expensive school. A 4.0 kid can expect academically to get that down to about $50,000 a year. And then, you know, does coach chip in or not? Depends how good of a player you are. Okay. So we've got the different types of schools financially, from free state schools. If you stay in state and you have certain GPAs and you meet certain requirements, the school is free, to schools that are very expensive private schools, ability to pay at schools, right? The family's financial ability to pay. Then you have the emotional piece. there are kids that are not ready to move away from home. They need to live with mom and dad for another year or two or three. They need to go to a local state school. Emotionally, they're just not prepared to live on their own. That exists. Then we have kids that have to be within striking distance of home. They just have to be. Emotionally, mom and dad need to be able to see every single game. There's still an apron string tying the kid to the parents, which is okay. Not everybody matures at the same rate. Some kids are ready to leave home. At 16, my middle son was lying to us and was traveling all around the United States telling us he was staying with somewhere. And he's a very independent-minded kid, handled some crazy situations very maturely, all on his own. We didn't even know about it. And then, you know, other kids aren't ready to do that, right? They aren't ready at 22 to leave home. It is what it is. Everybody's different. So we have the soccer ability that goes into the right fit. We have the academic acumen or drive or desire to achieve something very specific academically. And then the soccer kind of slides in there. And then we've got the financial ability of the family and the type of schools that are being chased that cost certain amounts that may be out of a family's reach. And then we've got this emotional tie to the logistics of where the school is, what type of school it is, size of the school. Some kids feel like if they move to a mountain school in West Virginia that only has 1,500 kids, my own son's school was in the mountains of Pennsylvania where they only had 1,500 kids. Some kids think that that would drive them crazy. Other kids think that they would thrive better in that environment. Other kids feel like they would shrink and disappear in New York City, rightfully so. You can be very lonely in a big city. It can be difficult to make friends in a big city and a big school of 80,000 like Penn State or something. And then other kids feel like they would thrive in that environment because that's their engine. That's the engine. It's just ticking, ticking, ticking all the time. I want fast. I want crazy. I want it coming at me. And then other kids shrink away from that. Dang, Erica, that was a mouthful, wasn't it? I'm not sure where we're going to go from there, but we're talking about the right fit emotionally, physically, financially, mentally, academically. I don't know why this is so hard to understand that every human being is an individual, but not everybody has to chase the D1 dream or they're a failure.
It's okay for your answers to be a mouthful because this is not what Twitter allows, and that's probably why people assume you're saying certain things. Honestly, I know what you're talking about, but I don't know why people would say you're anti-D1 given your own son and then your client's successes. But I did get what you were saying on Twitter is people just need to stop this D1 or bust mentality because that specific program might not be the right fit that you speak of. And we can go into what's going on with the transfer portal and how many players are making this quick decision because of this D1 or bust mentality only to transfer after year one. So can we get into that a little bit?
Yeah. So let's talk about this D1 or bust mentality so everybody's clear what I mean when I talk about it. Look, I've been told I'm a D1 player. I deserve to play D1. My parents have invested tens of thousands of dollars into my youth travel. I owe it to them to try to play D1. And without understanding that, look, on the women's side, I thoroughly believe D1 is probably striated into 9 different sections and levels. Okay. We have at the very bottom of Division 1, we have schools that don't even have their own fields. I saw pictures of Colorado's, I don't know if it's still current, but the former coach of Colorado State, who plays in the Pac-12, sends posts on social media, a picture of the women's locker room, and it's basically a dressing room that's about 12 by 12, it looks like. It's not really a locker room. It's a shower changing facility. So we have D1 schools that don't even have proper facilities. We have D1 schools that, if you look back at their record over the past 15 years, have probably run a grand total of 25, 30, 40 games over 15 years. We have Division 1 schools that when they win their conference and they go to the first round of the NCAAs, they get beat 15, 16, 17 to nothing by the big schools of the country, which first thing in my mind, well, then how bad must the worst team in that conference be if the best team in the conference is getting slaughtered? We have Division I teams that solely take pretty much national team players. That's it. You got to be on the national team of some country that's a major country. You've got to be unbelievably outstanding. And those are the 10, 12, I don't know, add it up. And I haven't even done the study, but look at the teams that have won or been in a Final Four of the D1 tournament. It's the same schools, pretty much the same. You see the Washington State sneak in one year. You'll see the USC sneak in one year. And then you don't hear from them for a while again. And then you'll see the consistent performers, the Florida States, the North Carolinas. Lately, Santa Clara's been on a roll again. But Santa Clara went through a period of 6, 7, 8 years where they weren't doing well. They couldn't even make the tournament in the Pac-12 for a while. So you have this up and down slope of different schools. But you look at the top 25, 50 schools in the country, Division I, it's the same names over and over and over again. And then you have the second, the runners up to those guys. And then you have the wannabes that want to win a conference tournament. And then you have the schools that realize, heck, I might be 5 years if I do it perfectly from even making a conference tournament. And then you have the schools that historically, statistically, over time, have never made a conference tournament in their life, let alone talking about making the NCAA tournament. And then you've got the bottom of the bottom of the bottom who would be happy just to win 5 games a year. Somebody said that there's 60%. I don't know if it's true exactly, but I bet it's really close. That 60% of the teams in the NCAA are sub-500, which means you're losing more games every year on average than you're winning, which means you're going to a losing team no matter what. No matter what the name is, no matter how wonderful the facilities are, from a soccer perspective, you're going to a losing team. And then Division II is the same way, and Division III is the same way, and NAIA is the same way. And junior college, certainly, I'm going to tell you, is the same way. We played against teams in junior college, and I had one of the best teams in the country at one point. And you're playing against teams where you wonder if a single girl on the team has ever played even in high school. They just are barely struggling to fill a team. I've coached college teams in junior college. In certain years, we couldn't start 11 players. We didn't have them. We didn't have enough players. So I've seen it happen. I've been a part of it. I've been on both sides of it. And we have to understand how striated this is. So to say, I want to play Division I, yes, there are Division I coaches in this country who would kill to have certain players who would never consider going to those schools, though, because of the locations, the facilities, the way the education is set up at those schools. Some of it's, yeah, there's a lot of different reasons why players, yes, I want to play D1, but yet I would not play at those schools. I want to play only at these schools. And so, I don't know. I've had kids, Erica, that have made decisions against my better judgment, but it's not my decision. It's their life, who a year later say, it was horrible. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not an I told you so guy, but told you so. You know, I told you it wasn't the right choice for you. Use my experience. And I don't have to be the only voice that kids are listening to, but listen to, I've got parents asking me to be the bearer and harbinger of bad news to their kids. They're quite aware that their kids would struggle even if they made a D1 roster and probably would never play. Yet the kids somehow got it in their head that I must play D1 or I'm a social failure. I'm an athletic failure. And I'm trying to tell kids this isn't true. That once you settle into a school, Erica, once you start making friends, once you start making that your new family, once you start settling in, once you feel the chemistry of your team and that desire to try to be better as a group, to support each other academically, to support each other emotionally, to support each other athletically, to bond together, it won't matter what the level was. And you're much better off going to a group that loves you, embraces you, wants you, appreciates you, than you are just sitting on the roster as the 28th best player on a Division I team. That's going to get old really fast, by my experience. When you're sitting at home and not being selected to travel on a bus, you don't even get to go and play with the team. The only time you get to be on the bench even is when you're at home. And even then, you see all the players getting called up in front of you to go sub, and you know you're very last on the bench. How long does it take before that gets old? I don't know. It's frustrating. It's frustrating to see people only focusing on labels. It's like, I don't know, what's the bag? Birkin bags? Isn't it Birkin, the really expensive one, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 bags? I got a $24 backpack sitting here that holds just as much, by the way. But, you know, hey, I guess if you have $25,000 to spend on a bag and you feel it gives you value and worth, then do it. I guess it's fine. Nothing wrong with that. But please understand that that doesn't make you happy. That bag is not going to make you happy. That label is not going to make you happy. Those Gucci shoes aren't going to make you happy. That's not where happiness lies. Happiness lies in family, in relationships, in being wanted. Our very first podcast we ever did, I think it's our second most listened to podcast, was with Bobby Clark. Bobby Clark coached at Notre Dame, coached at Stanford. I think he won 2 national titles, coached at Penn State, coached at Dartmouth. He coached New Zealand national team. His advice was go where you're wanted. And that, I don't know why, but this was 3-4 years ago. When I heard that, it was like a wake-up call for me. It's like, oh yeah, go where you're wanted. Of course, go where you're wanted. Go where you're wanted. Don't stop begging. It's like, okay, Erica, you're in a relationship. How would your relationship go if you and your significant other talked to each other and said, yeah, I guess there's nobody else to date. I guess you'll do. I guess we'll hang out together. I guess it's fine. Kind of feeling desperate. Kind of feeling like nobody else is going to love me. I guess you'll do. We'll settle for each other. It's like, but yet kids are doing this in college. Mm-hmm. They're making what might be top 3. I don't know, Erica, top 4, certainly top 5 most important decisions you'll make in your life. If we're not talking about having a second and third kid, just say having kids are a big deal. Getting married is a big deal. Where you go to college helps sets the stage for the next 70 years of your life. And we're going to settle for, okay, I guess I'll take you. I do need a 4th string goalkeeper. I guess you'll do as well as anybody. You seem to really want to be here. Good enough for me. As opposed to, I really want you. I need you. I'm calling you every week, every 7 days. I'm on the phone to you. What's it going to take to get you to commit here? You're a difference maker for us. I really, really honestly feel like you'll think this is home. Like you'll fit into our environment well. You're going to love our kids, your personality, their personality, my personality, our school's academics. It ticks all your boxes. What's it going to take to get you to come here and commit to me is way different than, yeah, I'll give you a roster spot. It's different. It's a different feeling. Go where you're wanted, for Pete's sake. Stop begging coaches to take you. How many times should I write this coach? If they were interested and they saw your video, they would be on you. Everything else is begging. Everything else is begging. Assuming they saw your video, yeah, videos go to spam. I get it. You got to figure out how to get them to dig it out, how to get them to look at it. But assume you've been assessed. Assuming you've been looked at the ID cam. Assuming they've seen your film. Assuming that they've been on the field and seen you. Kids get these cards at tournaments. They know what coaches were there. And then you start begging. And then you start begging. And then you start begging. And eventually, it becomes late in the process because you've been begging and chasing these schools for so long, and you've been ignoring all of these other schools that you should be approaching that are more appropriate for your soccer abilities and level, and academic abilities and level, and financial abilities and level. And you've been ignoring and blowing off some of these coaches. I know kids are blowing off coaches. I know they are. They're telling me they are. Yeah, I haven't got back to them. Yeah, I'm not that interested. Maybe you should talk to the coach before you make a judgment decision. Maybe you should take a look and do at least a video tour before you make snap judgment decisions about, oh God, it's D3. Oh geez, it's D2. Ooh, it's NAIA, gross. It's junior college. Ooh, why would I do that? I've worked so hard on my academics. Why would I consider an NAIA or a junior college? I don't need that. I don't want that. That's gross. What would my friends think? What would my family think? That's disgusting. I deserve to play D1.
I think that advice as far as going where you're wanted is so incredible. Because a lot of players are just attached to this idea of like going to these dream schools. And great. It is great to shoot for the stars. And I've known so many girls who had this dream. Oh, I want to play for the UNCs and the Santa Claras and the Stanfords. And I think that's awesome. And a small percentage can. But a lot of girls need to look like, what tier D1 can I play at? Can I keep up with the level of the UNCs? Have I tried out an ID camp? Have I just understood where I stand with these players? Or do I need to go to a different D1? But when you're looking at that other D1 school, you made such a good point that you need to look at how much playing time you're going to get. What's their record? There are a ton of D1 teams that are losing programs. They haven't won a game all season. And it's like, do you want to be a part of that program? Or do you want to be a part of a program where you are going to get playing time? They do win their conference in D2, D3, or NAIA, and you can contribute to the program. And I think these are just such important things for players to be aware of. And I do have a question as far as this, but what if a player is like, well, like, the only schools that are interested in me are like these like small schools in the middle of Kansas, and I have no clue what they are. And I'm just insulted by that.
Yeah. The first thing I tell kids is get on the, what's it going to cost you? It's going to be free except for your time. And it's probably going to take 30 minutes of your time to have a conversation with that coach. At least you explored. At least it's a practice of talking to coaches, I think is important. I tell kids, any coach that wants to talk to you, get on the phone with them. Now, there will be some certain point in time, probably, where you've talked to maybe 5-6 coaches of virtually the same level in kind of the same geographic locations where there's a lot of similarities, very similar win-loss records, similar academics. And at some point, you might be able to get to the point where you've got enough experience and talking to enough schools at certain levels where you can make some judgments without talking to the coaches. But you need to be able to build experience in talking to coaches and hearing what they have to say. And it doesn't take much to do a little bit of homework. So the first thing, and this happens to me, Erica, as long as I've been in the business, there must be at least once a month, one or two schools that come up that I've never heard of. And so the first thing I'll do is I'll go to their website and I'll pull up their team and I'll look at the last, how long has the coach been there is my first question. Okay. Because if a coach is coming into a zero win school for the last 10 years and they're a brand new coach, yet their history says they've come from winning programs and been a part of winning programs, that coach deserves an opportunity to turn that program around. My own son's decision at St. Francis in Pennsylvania when he went to play for BJ Craig was based on that decision. The team had never made the conference playoffs. And I said, well, then go make a difference, because that coach is coming from Penn State as an assistant. Played for Bobby Clark. I bet he knows how to win. And sure enough, that's what happened. The coach knew how to turn around a program. He knew how to recruit. He knew how to coach. And BJ's now been a proven winner. And he's at UNLV now. We'll see what he does. But the point is that my advice to my own son was, don't worry about the win-loss records. A brand new coach who's had a great track record in history of where he's been. There's that situation I look at. But if the coach has been there for 6 years and the team's not done any better for 6 years, that tells you something, doesn't it? It tells you something. And look, I try to be careful of not, I think the psychological term is transference. I am Mr. Uber competitive. If I lose in checkers, I'm probably pissed for 2 days. I am the guy who wants to win everything. So I personally, I would far rather go to a junior college or an NAIA or a D3 program with an opportunity to win a national title than I would rather go to a D1 school who's never in their history even sniffed the NCAA tournament. But that's me. I know other players more than happy just wearing the gear to ABC Division I school just so that they can say they play Division I. They have no competitive bone in their body. Losing does not bother them. They sleep. I've coached these kids. They're singing on the bus as soon as we get on the bus after a loss. That pisses me off. Like, don't let it ruin your life, but let it ruin your next bus trip at least. let it ruin your next sport. Ruminate on how this feels to lose. And some kids go, yeah, I did. Doesn't bother me. I'm good with it. Well, they won't say that out loud. Clearly, their actions indicate it. So there's those kids too on this spectrum, right? You're happy. If what floats your boat and makes you happy and fulfills you in every way is saying that you play D1, whether the team wins, loses or not, whether the academics are great or not, whether the facilities are great or not, if that's what's important to you, I'm all for supporting that too, because you're an individual. And if that's what you want to chase, we'll give it our best go. We can chase that. I don't think that's most kids. I think most kids want to play. I think most players want to compete. I think most players feel like winning is, well, it's like better than losing. I think most kids feel that way. There's always exceptions.
I do believe that. I do believe most kids want to play. They want to contribute to their team and make an impact. And it's for 4 years, you know? They don't want to just be sitting there all 4 years and they were just a spot on the roster. And looking back on playing at Hopkins, we actually had several girls transfer from Division I programs during my time there. And a few of them ended up being D3 All-Americans. They played every minute of every game and they just were miserable at their D1 schools. And they looked back and they were like, yeah, like we kind of just chose it because it was D1. But now that we're here at Hopkins, we get to play. We love the program. The school's nice and small. So it's just like interesting looking back on that and the girls who had transferred out of D1 to D3. But I've also seen girls transfer from D3 to D1 and kind of used it as a stepping stone. I have one just very interesting case. One of the athletes I worked with, she transferred from McDaniel in the Centennial Conference to UNC. And she just wanted to be a part of Anson Dorrance's team. Granted, she didn't start or play too much, but she was fine with it. She just wanted to be a part of that environment. And obviously it's an incredible opportunity. So it is possible from D3 to D1, D1 to D3. But I will always give the advice, and I'm sure you're the same, Don, don't make a fast decision and ensure this is the school you're going to be rock solid at for 4 years, because it's a lot of stress to transfer and just set up shop and then leave and then move in again and get used to a new coach, a new team. It's just a lot, but it just seems like the transfer portal is just so out of control nowadays. And I don't know what is going on, but I just kind of blame social media. I think everyone always thinks, you know, grass is greener or whatever, but it's wild.
Well, it is. In the every time I talk about the transfer portal, so I don't have access to it. Only college coaches get access to it, but I've got some very close friends that will, you know, every few months they'll share with me the numbers that are up there. And so I do some extrapolation in my own head. And if I talk about a couple thousand kids being in the transfer portal, let's say on the girls' side, and somebody says, yeah, but out of 39,000 players in the NCAA, it's not that big of a number. Why are you making a big deal out of this? And this is why. It's 2,000 kids, which means 2,000 head coaches also aren't happy. No head coach likes to see a kid transfer out of their program for one reason or another, right? Unless the kid's a troublemaker. Right? Which is the case, of course, it's bad riddance. Why did I kick you off the team? Because you should have drunk at a volleyball game. That's why. What are you talking about? Right? This is unacceptable. So that happens. But that's small percentage of the reasons why kids transfer. I think most kids are transferring because they don't feel like this is home. They don't feel like they're part of that program. They don't feel like they're valued and wanted. I think that's why most kids are transferring, at least out of the Division I programs. Now, remember that the transfer portal holds Division I, Division II, and Division III. It holds all three divisions. Division III was just added this last year. And so we do have the transfer up and transfer down, like you said. Mm-hmm. And I love the kid who says, look, I know I can play at UNC. I know I can play there, but I'm not going to get a chance. I'm willing to go to Division III and prove myself and then bet on myself and then see if I can transfer. Because I know darn well, if you're a Division III All-American and you contact almost any Division I school in the country, they'll take a look at your film. They will assess you. You're an All-American. You're one of the top 11 players in the country or 20 players in the country. Yeah, they'll take a look. Promise you they'll look. Promise you they'll assess. So that's your opportunity, right? To go prove yourself. So I really dig that attitude. And I've tweeted this one quite a few times. I'll do it again soon. Because look, why, if you're not willing to bet on yourself, should that big time coach bet on you? I don't believe that I can be an All-American at junior college or NAIA or Division III or Division II. I don't know how good I am. I just want to jump straight into that corner office next to Bill Gates making $1 million a year with $5 million stock options. That's where I want to jump straight to out of college, okay? It's that mentality. It's like, I want to jump straight into North Carolina. I'm not on the national team. I'm not even in the regional pool. I'm not even the best player on my team. But I'm going to go to North Carolina's camp because they're going to discover me. They're going to find me. They're going to love me. But the fact is, most of the kids just blend in. They're fine. They're lovely. Look, they can hit a ball. They can receive a ball. They can shoot a ball. They can head a ball. They can communicate. They can organize just like everybody else. But they're not bigger, stronger, faster athletically. And their touch isn't so brilliant that it's like, holy crap, did you see that? I've never seen that before, you know? And there's nothing spectacular. And they're not even, as I said, the best player on their team or the best player in their league. And yet we're expecting to play at the best school in the country that's only going to take 5, 6, 7, 8 players, 9 players max in any given year from around the world. And by the way, they are flying to Sweden and they are flying to Norway and they are checking out England. They are going and checking out these national teams. They're watching games. They're watching the Women's World Cup at under 17. They're paying attention. They're jotting down names. They're making phone calls. They're reaching out because they want to win another national title. They aren't going, who's the most average player that I can find in ECNL? They're not doing that. So what are we doing? What are we talking about? The transfer portal, yes, works up. It works down. It works for players trying to move up. It works for players who didn't quite make it or it wasn't the right fit for them. And I don't know. I think right now the numbers are crazy. Remember, we're dealing with 2020 COVID numbers in the transfer portal. We're dealing with kids who couldn't visit a school, who couldn't meet a coach in person. We're still dealing with that 2020-21 mess in the transfer portal. Extrapolate that out. It's not over till 2024. 2025 will be the first totally clean class with no super seniors hanging on at all. Will be 2025. So the optimist in me wants to say that the COVID is still having a massive effect on the transfer. That's the optimist in me. The pessimist in me says, yeah, this is a big... So you've noticed, because you've been very active on Twitter for a long time now, you're noticing the number of players now that are being told they must be on Twitter, they must be on Facebook in order to get recruited, create an account. Sadly, I know a lot of parents are running their accounts for their kids, but there's a lot of kids that are running their own accounts too. And this is picking up steam. I don't think this is going to slow down. So the more kids that pay attention to other kids committing, that pay attention to other to coaches and programs that are saying, oh, we just committed this kid, we just committed that kid, the pressure does build up, doesn't it? And you start to feel this internal angst of, I got to keep up. I'm falling behind. Look at these commitments. I'm falling behind. I got to get going. And my fear is that it's going to lead to emotional problems. That's my fear. That's my pessimistic fear. I'm genuinely concerned for the emotional health and well-being of these kids. And there are other very, very popular, very highly followed anonymous accounts that talk about, it's just business. It's only business. You can't take any of this personally. And then we start to feel like, oh crap, I'm a commodity, right? I'm a commodity. I'm going to be used. I'm going to be, this is, look out for yourself. Look out for number one. Look out for, I'm not sure how healthy this is for our society to think like that, to not think about others, to not put others first, to not think about what's good for my overall health and well-being when picking a school, that I must keep up with the Joneses, that I must drive, that I must be, I don't know how healthy this is. kids are traveling one weekend from California, next weekend to Seattle, next weekend to Florida, next week. I'm not sure how healthy this is. I'm concerned. I really, honestly, am concerned, Erica. For future generations, I'm worried.
I agree. I think it's just becoming this whole comparison trap. And like you said, keeping up with the Joneses, and these kids aren't just being realistic. Okay, well, what do I need in a school? Like, forget everyone else. Like, what's going to make me happy? And finding the right fit it's way more than that label and the jersey and that Instagram post. And I always find it interesting, Dawn, how when people sign, they're like, oh, well, I just signed to play Division I here. It's like, you could have just left the Division I out. You could have just said the name of the school. And that just shows where people's heads are at. It's just like, well, why else are you posting that? To get likes? Like, really, like, deeply ask yourself that question. But with the right fit, what are the top two places kids should start when finding it? Should they be looking at the major they want, the soccer? Like, let's start with just two places to start.
Okay. I like to look at end goals and then say, if this is my end goal, how do I accomplish that goal? What would be the steps to accomplish that end goal? So the first thing they need to, I don't know, I think it's Shakespeare that said, to thine own self be true. I could be wrong. But you have to know yourself, first of all. So if you know that my whole life I've dreamed of sending rockets into space, this is all I think about. I'm in the rocket club. I've seen every movie. This is what floats my boat, or I want to be a doctor, right? This is what I've always wanted, is to be a doctor. So I'm pretty damn sure I want, or always wanted to be a lawyer. I've always wanted to be in international finance. I've seen myself in my dreams traveling to other countries, you know, and meeting with other people in other languages and other cultures and helping establish, you know, international finance in that country through various means. If that's how you picture yourself, or I picture myself being involved in soccer for my whole life, start with that picture if you have it. If you have that picture, don't force it. I didn't know what I wanted to do till I was 32. So, you know, with the rest of my life. But you don't have to know. But if you know, you know. Start there and then figure out what schools are going to help me along that pathway. Certain schools are better than other schools at internships, which means more guaranteed jobs coming out of college, which means practical real-world experience in that industry, which is great for your resume, which means making connections, getting to know other people. Business, the world is about networking. The world. We are humans trying to interact with other humans, trying to trade things with other humans. What's about relationships and getting to know people and how to handle people? What school helps me with that, if soccer or softball or whatever my sport is, isn't the idea for my career? Okay. If that is my idea for my career, then how do I make that happen? And start with those schools. So I believe you've got to start with your end vision, if you have it, and then begin to march it backwards into what college do I choose for me, and then understand, at least in women's soccer, there's about 1,300 plus or 1,600 plus schools. And men's soccer, there's about 1,300 plus schools. And know that, you know, don't just name three schools. That means you didn't do very much research. It means, I don't know, if I wanted to do engineering, I just Google top engineering schools in the U.S. and it'll march us down to the top 100. Out of that top 100, there's Division I, there's Division II, Division III, there's small D1s, small D2s, big one D1s, big D2s, big NAIAs, small NAIAs. There's a mix. And then second of all, I think you have to look at who you are as a player and be honest. Every player, if they're honest with themselves, knows if they're clearly the best player on their team or if they're the number seven player on their team, 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there. I start, but I'm not in the top three. Or I'm a bench player. That's who I am. That's what I am. That doesn't mean you have to settle with that and say that's who I am forever. If they find an Erica Sutter if they find a Wendy Earlbeck, if they work on nutrition and fitness and strength and all of that, they can improve, certainly. But you genetically, also, you've got to look at what you're dealing with, right? I could have done sprints every day of my life with an expert like you, and I never would have beat Usain Bolt. He's got certain genetics that I will never have. And I could try to dunk a basketball every day of my life, but I never would have beaten Michael Jordan, ever, even if I dedicated every waking moment to it. Because genetically, I didn't have what he had, and I didn't have the drive that he has. So you have to realize what your top end looks like and just acknowledge it. You have to at some point. And I find that that's so assessing the academic piece and assessing the athletic piece are where the two points have to be your beginning point. And even in the academics, kids are fooling themselves. When I see a 4.3 GPA that scored 1150 on the SAT, come on. But my kid's a bad test taker. I'm sorry. Tests are part of college. I am really sorry. Now, get your kid assessed if your kid has ADD or has OCD or has whatever acronym that is the latest acronym for having a learning disability. Let's acknowledge it. Let's get your kid some help. I thoroughly understand. But let's, come on. Three attempts at an SAT and your best score is 1190? I've got kids scoring. One of my kids scored a 35 on his ACT third time out. I got another kid who scored just right now, 1350, first time out, not studying ACT. That's way smarter than I will ever be in my life, no matter how much I study. Okay? That's a different level. So when you go to tournaments and you see these academic lists and you, every girl's a 4.0, every boy is a 3.5 or better almost. You know, all these kids are highly driven to do well academically, but then they take the SAT and they don't want to take the SAT again. And they don't even want to report it. They're embarrassed. Well, yeah, because certain public schools do give out grades for showing up. They give out grades that are very good grades for turning in all of your homework. They'll give you second and third chances on your homework to fix it. And then they'll give you the better grade of certain schools in this country run that way. Okay? So just show up. You'll get very good grades. Other schools are very challenging academically. And there's no slack. There's no second chances. You just study and figure it out or you fail. So academically, you have to know where you're at, know yourself, know what kind of a student you are. Certain kids, I had a girl, Lindsay Dickerson, but she says, I want to go be a doctor. And she went to Stanford. Then she went to Johns Hopkins. Now she's at University of Washington. She's a doctor. Some kids, that kind of a schedule to be a doctor and going to Stanford and playing on the soccer team and winning a national title, they can't handle it. Know yourself. Know that that's not possible for you. Know that you need the spring break off and that Johns Hopkins giving you a chance to have a little break in the spring is where you're going to be able to catch up on your classes. Where at a Division I school that's a big name, know that if you're at Colorado in the spring, you're getting on a plane and you're flying out to California at some point. Okay? So there is no break. And at certain schools, forget about the idea of traveling overseas. If you're studying international finance, you'd like to go to school in Italy for a semester. You'd like to be able to study at their business school in Torino. And that's not happening if you're playing D1. Coach expects you to be there. This is not an option for you. If that's what your dream is for your academics, then follow what your dream is. There's no shame in it. Promise you will feel like a family once you settle in and once you start contributing and feeling like you're a contributor to that program. I think that's two, academics and soccer, but you've got to get assessed. You've got to be realistic. And it's got to be somebody who won't tell you what you want to hear. It's going to be somebody who tells you what you need to hear. I don't care who that is. We offer to do it as a company. If we're around at a tournament, you're around at a tournament, we'll watch you. We've even had events where we brought kids in and watched them, but it doesn't have to be us. It can be the person in your community who doesn't coach your team. Maybe they coach at another club, but you know that they played D1. You know what it looks like. You know they played pro. You know they know what it looks like. And say, please, please, what do I have to do? I just need an assessment. I just need someone to tell me the truth. Okay. Now it's one person's truth, and soccer is somewhat subjective, but only a little. It's not completely subjective. This isn't figure skating in the Olympics, where you go, how can they rate that person? The person fell down and they got rated above that. How does this happen? This isn't that. This isn't that. In the eyes of an expert, most of us can tell in the first 15, 20 minutes that there's an outstanding player on a pitch who easily could play at Stanford or North Carolina. I'll put out this concept. I think a parent who's never seen soccer before in their life knows the difference between a kid who's clearly going to play at North Carolina and a kid who's not that good, not that athletic. Even if they've never seen a soccer game in their entire life, they know the difference. It's not that hard. We can do a camp, you and me together, and you and me will both agree with 100% certainty who the top five players in that camp are. Guarantee we will agree. Even though we've got different levels of coaching experience, we will agree. We can probably agree who the bottom five are, by the way, who don't seem to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. We can probably, it's everybody in the middle that's the problem. Mm-hmm. Where do we rank them? Why is that player slightly better than that player? That's where the problem lies. As I always say, North Carolina needs, Florida State needs, Stanford needs zero help finding their team, because the best players in the world are all available and at their disposal. It's all the schools in the middle that have a problem, because they aren't going to be able to get those players that those schools want. They want them, but they can't get them. That's where the problem lies. It's everything in the middle. It's all the schools in the middle, and it's all of the players in the middle that are having a problem figuring out where they belong.
I can't reinforce enough what you just said there as far as getting evaluated in your soccer ability to find the right fit. And I would even say before you start attending all the ID camps in the world. And it's, and I know that the truth might hurt some, and I'm sure you've had tough conversations with people, Don, but it saves people so much time and it really gets them on the right track to finding a school where their ability matches that program and they don't waste their money. They don't chase these schools down and beg them to give them a look. Like, get that evaluation first. It's so important.
And I think like sophomore year, going into your sophomore year is like the perfect sweet spot. Mm-hmm. Freshman, and you've noticed this too, the difference in a change physiologically between a freshman and a sophomore can be unbelievably big. It's if we're going to generalize, which we are, we're generalizing, it's like the magic year. It's the year where it either your sport either grabs you and you can't shake it because you love it so much, because it's that oh, I'm in high school, I'm kind of separate from mom and dad a little bit more. Dating starts to become an issue. Driving cars, getting your license, all of these can dramatically change. I can get a job now. I can work. At, you know, 16, I can start working. I can drive. Makes dating much easier, right? I start to come into my own as an academic. I start to realize what my strengths and weaknesses are academically and athletically. I start getting to compare myself to 17 and 18 year olds on a high school field, maybe, or at PE. I get to start to get a sense for where I fall. That is like the magic year. So somewhere at that end of that freshman, going into that sophomore, halfway through my sophomore year, it starts to become really important to know where you sit on a worldwide scale. Okay. How do I compare myself to those girls in England or those kids in Canada or the kids in Mexico that are all trying to come into the U.S. and play? And by the way, 35% of the men in the NCAA and 12.5% of the girls in the NCAA, the numbers will continue to grow of kids coming, recognizing from other countries that what we have here is a little gold mine. That you can study and get your degree and play soccer. And if soccer is your main drive, to have a fallback of having a degree, and you can do it all at the same time. Okay. That doesn't exist in other countries like it exists in the United States. Canada, I'll throw them in. U Sports does a fantastic job in Canada. Okay. They've paid attention to what we've done in the United States and they've found their own little niche. But I think that assessment has to happen. And it generally can't be from your club coach. because they need to tell you what you need to hear, what you want to hear. And the other side of it is a lot of club coaches don't have direct experience in the college game. Maybe as a player, but come on, that's one, two schools max usually that you are experiencing. That means two conferences max, which means 24, 25 teams that you're looking at and comparing players from. It's not, there's a big difference between certain conferences in certain parts of the country and other conferences and other parts of the country. Then they do this big generalization. Well, I think you're a D1 player. Based on what experience are you saying this? Right? Sometimes it can't be from your individual trainer who hires you because they don't have the experience, or who you hire rather, who doesn't have the experience. So you need to start asking around your community. I know some of the smallest communities in this country who have incredible soccer resources within them that just don't understand their value and nobody's asking them. Start asking around and start dealing with people, if you can, who have been directly involved in the development of that person, of those kids who have moved on. Because what those people have is a reference point, right? So in my own reference point of what Lindsay Dickerson looked like at 12 and what she looked like playing for the U.S. national team and playing for Stanford, I have a reference point of what Kamani Hill looked like at 11 and 12 and what he looked like playing for UCLA, what he looked like playing for Wolfsburg in Germany, and what he looked like playing for Colorado in the MLS. I have these direct reference points in my life where I can say, oh, he reminds me of, or she reminds me of, or I see a lot of similarities in. And so you have these reference. If a coach doesn't, or an advisor doesn't have these reference points in their life, what are they comparing to?
Guys, please take this to heart. You have to get assessed so you know where you stand and what your ability matches with what school. And I also think a great takeaway from this whole discussion has been find the right fit for you. Don't worry about the noise, what your teammates are doing, what people on social media are posting, what schools they're committing to. Go to the school that suits your needs, academics, your athletic ability, and go with that and trust yourself. And Don, I think this has just been a really great conversation. And I'm sure not a lot of people want to hear some of these things, but sometimes you need that tough love. You really need it to make a logical decision. So I appreciate you coming back on, and I'm sure we will do another one soon, but where can people follow you?
It's been a fun series that we've kind of stumbled into, haven't we? And so any listeners, look, if you've got real specific questions are the wrong answers, but if you've got some topics that you want us to cover, we're happy to continue to do this. She and I both have smiles on our faces because we enjoy this. And we enjoy how we bounce off of each other and speaking the machine as long as there's a desire for the information. So, yeah, thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. And yeah, guys, definitely leave a comment or just shoot us a message or just respond to our tag of this episode. And if you have any requests or questions, we'll be happy to hop on and do an episode again. And we're just here to get out information to everyone and just guide you in this process and make it a little bit easier than it is, because there's a lot of wild things out there and we know it's hard to navigate the college recruiting space, but Don's absolutely incredible and I'm so glad to have his knowledge here, and we hope you guys enjoyed the episode.